Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask your patience, just to hold off calling for a few minutes. We have with us today my good friend, Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter, and she's done a fascinating summary, a fascinating letter on what happened to the Pentagon. Now, there are two views, one recently put forward by a Frenchman, and a book has come out in France, and it'll be here in the United States very, very soon. And that view suggests that a plane did not hit the Pentagon, or if it was a small plane. But basically the whole idea is if you look at the pictures up on the web, you won't see any wreckage from the attack on the Pentagon. And if so, the theory is that the Pentagon was actually bombed, and the government is feigning the fact that a plane crashed into it. Now, there are many, many good people who've looked at those pictures up on the web, and they've said, well, gee, it doesn't look like there's a plane there. We don't see any wreckage. So, therefore, no plane hit this. The government made up the whole issue. And then there are other people like Karen Lee, who's researched this very carefully and talked to people who've actually seen the plane, and I've followed through and talked to several of the people that she's talked to, and yes, they saw the plane come in. So what we do is we focus our attention on an issue that does nothing but lead to confusion, because if you watch television, you'll see talking dogs there, you'll see talking cows, you'll see all sorts of things on television that are not real, but they become your reality. And, of course, we've seen this thing. I saw this issue with the AIDS epidemic, which, you remember, I had spent almost a decade leading the battle in the California Medical Association, trying to address the epidemic from a public health point of view. And there, at one time, was a great deal of interest in the AIDS epidemic, and then along came a Dr. Duesberg and a young man who worked with him named Brian Ellison, and they said that there wasn't any AIDS epidemic, that basically the reason people were dying was because the medicines that the doctors were giving them, and they made a very, very convincing argument there was no AIDS epidemic. Their representatives appeared on radio programs, many Christian, good Christian radio programs all across America, giving the information out, and they ended up getting people so confused that today there's not a lot of interest in the AIDS epidemic, although to date over 400,000 Americans, 470,000 Americans are dead of the epidemic. Another 466,000 as of last year were living with the disease and will eventually die. And there are hundreds of thousands of others, but nobody's really concerned about that because they've so confused the issue, nobody knows what to think about it. And when you get confused, you can't think. We're seeing this with the recent revelations that perhaps George Bush had some information that they were planning on hijacking some of our planes. And the issue is not whether George Bush knew this or not. The issue is, what did our intelligence agencies know? But you see, if we can make George Bush the issue, if we can focus the issue on that, people can't think effectively. So we're going to be arguing about the wrong issue so that we can't see the forest for the trees. Well, Karen Lee, I appreciate so much your being with us tonight. And I want our listeners to hear what you have discovered about the attack on the Pentagon on September 11th.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. You have stated quite eloquently, this really is about disinformation. And when you have disinformation, it leads to confusion. And that is the whole point of disinformation. You confuse people so then they really don't know the real issue. And this whole hoax about no plane crashing into the Pentagon has done just that. It has created literal arguments on the internet, people fighting back and forth. It has served no useful purpose at all other than to create confusion and to take away our thoughts and views from much bigger issues that are going on. But as you stated, how this all really started was a French website had some photos on the site and challenged people if they could find the plane. And then, shortly after that, NBC had released Pentagon surveillance tapes from the surveillance cameras, and people started questioning that tape that was released because it was choppy in appearance. Some people said that it had been edited, and it also had the wrong time and date stamped on the footage. It had September 12, 5:30 p.m. instead of September 11th. Well, as far as that footage goes, this from the surveillance cameras, people need to know that these type of cameras, they're used in banks. I'm sure if anybody has watched TV and seen the footage of a bank robbery, you can see it's choppy in image. It's because it doesn't flip at the normal 30 frames per second. It records a picture at about 2 frames per second. So that's why it looked choppy in appearance. As far as the wrong date and time, I mean, that could have even been that the timer was set incorrectly on the camera, or it could have very well been that, knowing that they were releasing that it could have been done on purpose just to cause disinformation. But as far as the French website goes, I examined that, and I talked to a few people who were pretty knowledgeable as far as photographs and so forth. They told me that the photographs on the web had been cropped out to cut out any of the wreckage. In fact, one of the pictures on the web even was taken from the opposite side of the building. And so clearly, you know, people would look at that and say, yeah, okay, I guess no plane ever crashed in there. But, you know, the important thing is that's not how you do an investigation. As you mentioned, Dr. Stan, we can see talking dogs and talking cows on TV, but that doesn't mean it's real. So what I did actually was launch an investigation and start looking into every aspect of this.
And, of course, you're an investigative reporter. You've done this for years, so you know how to go about it.
That's correct. And first of all, you have to ask the big question, you know, if no plane crashed into the Pentagon, then what happened to the passengers? Well, the big story that seemed to be perpetrated, they were saying that passengers from American Flight 77 were somehow shuttled to United Flight 93, and then everybody died when the plane crashed into Pennsylvania. Well, as you know, Dr. Stan, I did the story on air with you several months ago. I did a complete investigation into United Flight 93, and there was no way the timeline fit at all. And those planes could not have intersected one way or the other. So I can emphatically state that those planes, the people were not taken onto Flight 93. But the biggest thing in investigating this, one should know, first of all, the black boxes were recovered within the Pentagon in the rubble on September 14th. People said that there were no photographs showing wreckage. Well, I have those photographs in my newsletter, clearly showing wreckage on the lawn. I even have a photograph of the rescue workers. They're standing right in front of the Pentagon as they're ready to go in, and you can clearly see plane wreckage in the windows of the Pentagon. But the most important key to all this story were the eyewitnesses. There were many eyewitnesses who saw this plane crash into the building, and to ignore eyewitness statements, I mean, that's what the government did when they tried to cover up TWA Flight 800. They ignored eyewitness testimony, or then when it came time to hearings, they wouldn't even let the eyewitnesses speak. Well, that is a very key part of this. I know you have, I gave you those numbers, Dr. Stan, and I know you have talked to some of the eyewitnesses that I had quoted in my story. But let me just read a few of these quotes. I talked to a Catholic priest by the name of Father Stephen McGraw, and he was on his way to Arlington Cemetery for a funeral. He was on the freeway. He had taken a wrong turn, and he stated, "I was in the left-hand lane. I had my windows closed and didn't hear anything until the plane was above my car." He estimated the plane passed over his car at about 20 feet. The plane clipped the top of the light pole just before it got to us, injuring a taxi driver whose taxi was just a few feet from my car. I saw it crash into the building. There was an explosion and a loud noise, and I felt the impact. I remember seeing a fireball coming out of two windows in the Pentagon and a fiery explosion billowing through those two windows. I have several eyewitness statements. Tim Timmerman was a private pilot. He saw it hit. He actually said the nose hit and the wings came forward and it went up in a fireball. I have an AP reporter that saw it crash. Many of the witnesses that I spoke to, I specifically asked them, was this a large plane? Was it a small plane? What did you see? Were there any kind of markings on the plane? And every person that I talked to stated that it was an American Airlines plane. They either identified the stripes or the two A's or the eagle, the colors. They all said it was a full passenger plane. And this was just in phone work that I did, Dr. Stan. I really believe that once I got into this and started tracing down eyewitnesses, I think had I gone to Washington, D.C., and started chasing down leads, I don't think it would have really been any problem at all to come up with 50 or 100 eyewitnesses, because there were so many people alone on the freeway and at the time that that happened, because it was very heavy traffic. A lot of them saw the plane come in low and it clipped the light pole, just sheared it off. In fact, I have a photograph of that in my newsletter as well. So there's no doubt in my mind that a plane crashed into the Pentagon. Another thing, you know, people have said, well, gee, you know, we haven't seen any, you know, big pieces of the plane. We haven't seen engines laying out. I wish people would take a few more science courses, quite frankly, because I saw the same thing. People try to defy physics or the law of gravity with the WTC. I'm seeing the same thing here. We have to think that this is a lightweight aluminum plane crashing into a cement building. What do people think is going to happen to it? You are going to have a plane that is going to be pretty disintegrated. So, you know, this is I've had people say, well, gee, we should have seen the whole plane just sitting there. No, it would not happen. And again, the biggest thing on all of this, Dr. Stan, is not so much about if a plane crashed into the Pentagon. I think the biggest story, the story within the story, as you say, is the fact that I believe that this was put out by intelligence sources because the fact that people are really starting to question the events of 9/11.
And of course, then we get them arguing about the wrong issues, why they can't think effectively about what's happening. And you know, one of the most interesting things, and I know you followed up on this, on the day after the attack on the Pentagon, the Washington Post, which of course is part of the whole problem, is simply a mouthpiece of the invisible government, and of course it's controlled by people who are part of the Bilderberger complex. But the Washington Post ran a story, and I've forgotten the author's name, you probably remember, but they sent stringers out the day of the attack. Now, a stringer apparently is somebody who goes out and talks to people on the ground, and one of them came back with a story from, and I've forgotten the man's name, but it was Stephen somebody, you correct me if I'm wrong, who supposedly had seen a plane, but it wasn't a big passenger plane, it was just a small computer plane, small American computer plane, fly right past his window, and he watched it crash into the Pentagon. Well, you know, there's a lot of difference between a little plane and a great big plane, and of course, you had a lot of people on that great big plane. But of course, I mean, this story somebody had to have planted it, because I know that you had actually checked to that building where supposedly the man lived, and I know my friend Joel Skousen checked the building, and there was nobody there. In other words, nobody there by that name. Yeah. So the day after, the day, very day of the attack, somebody planted that information with the reporter who wrote the story for the Washington Post. Obviously, this was long-range planning. They created an individual who told a story, and this adds even more confusion. It wasn't that it was simply an explosion at the Pentagon. It was a small plane, but it wasn't a big plane. So
right.
Now, was it no plane at all? Was it a small plane? Was it a big plane? Now they've really got you confused,
mm-hmm.
and they're playing games with our minds. And once you understand that, the only question is, who's doing it? And it should be very obvious why they're doing it, because when you get people confused, why, you can convince them of anything, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I chased it down. You're right. First of all, Dr. Stan, a stringer is a reporter that can more or less be on contract for a paper, but doesn't necessarily, you know, he can write a story and almost get paid, like, on contract for it. So,
okay.
That's what a stringer is, not necessarily a regular 9-to-5 employee of the paper. But you're absolutely right. I chased it down. I can't remember his name. I have it in my notes. I want to say his last name was Patterson, but I cannot remember, quite frankly.
It was started with a P, okay.
Yes, but I chased it down, and no one had ever heard of the man. So that's what made me suspicious right away, because I didn't feel, when I talked to the reporter who had done this, I didn't feel she had anything to hide, or, you know, why would she lie about it? But going more and more into this, and this was being pushed in such a fervent manner, I thought, you know, this is just a pure disinformation piece. And what I included in my newsletter to make people aware of what disinformation is all about. Back in November of 96, I did a report in my investigative reporter on Operation Cable Splice. Operation Cable Splice is actually a 14-page document that was leaked by someone within the intelligence community. But the title of that is an aggressive program to counter the disruptors movement. Now, you can insert Patriot Movement if you like in there. But actually, whole plan is a government plan. And it actually employs different methodology to corrupt or splinter any force, actually, that would try to come against the elitist plan for a one-world order. And I included a paragraph in the newsletter on Operation Cable Splice, and I think it almost identifies this no-plane or commuter plane story exactly. Because in essence, what Operation Cable Splice says is they will put agents to infiltrate the different Patriot groups, people that actually work for the government in some manner, in intelligence, and people then think that this person is a good person, you know, they're putting out good information, and then obviously when a story is put out, for example, like the no plane or commuter plane theory, when that disinformation is put out, then it's going to be proved false. Well, then, of course, it damages the credibility of the opposition. So what they do, they cleverly place agents provocateur or people working for the CIA or one way or the other. You know, people have to realize that here in the Patriot Movement, the government is, you know, covering everything. The intelligence community is covering everything.
I think we have to differentiate the government from the intelligence community, because I think the government, the intelligence agencies, are an independent organization unto itself. And we find in many, many countries the intelligence agency runs the government rather than the government mm-hmm. running the intelligence agency.
Well, we have so much in this country. We have, you know, the the CIA and military intelligence, and even, you know, people working with the FBI reporting and so forth.
Don't forget NSA. I mean, yep. That's the biggest one of all, and they've kept that so secret. But they're the ones, of course, who echelon listen to all of our telephone conversations, all of our emails, read our emails, read our faxes. But they don't do it. They get the British to do it because they wouldn't want to violate the laws, would they? Now, if anybody doesn't know Echelon, you need to get our four tapes out on the coming dictatorship. And when they can violate the laws of this country, both in spirit and in fact, and nothing is ever done, and Congress is afraid to speak out, you know we're in trouble as a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why the whole point of doing this story, Dr. Stan, is I am really encouraging people to have discernment. We cannot believe everything that we are told. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, we can't take everything on face value anymore just because it's a so-called patriot that's saying it, because we have been effective. We have been getting out truth and information, and the intelligence communities do not like that. So, you know, any opposition to the elitist plan for a one-world order, naturally they're going to infiltrate that. And people really need to be discerning. They really do.
But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of good, I mean, I know some very, very good people who've been really taken in by this, and they're really convinced that this is, you know, that there was no plane. And these are people that have no question at all where their heart is, but I think that they have not done the research that you did. And I'll quite frankly tell you that until I'd actually talked to several of the people who'd seen the plane, and I did, Steve Rizzo, the father, Stephen McGraw that you mentioned, and, of course, that fellow's name was Stephen Patterson, the non-existent individual. I found it in my notes right here with me. You know, then you begin to see this was long-range planning.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, as so many people, they'll see that talking dog on television, and they'll never bother to say, you know, that's all animation. That becomes their reality, and they're just, it's so easy, especially with pictures and the technology that's available now, to confuse even good people.
Well, and what, I guess what bothers me too, you know, is, you know, I know the eyewitness testimonies are most important. And I know some people have talked to the eyewitnesses and then gone ahead and ignored those testimonies and continued with their story. I know not everybody can be an investigative reporter, but you have to realize that to do an investigation, I think this is not only a reporter, but a detective, a police officer, anyone will tell you, you gather every fact, every piece of information that you can. From everything. You have no conclusion. And then it's like puzzle pieces. You put it together and you get your conclusion. With this situation, looking on a website, with this French website looking at these planes, you've already now, that's what we used to call yellow journalism. You have a preconceived notion or conclusion, and then you try to make the facts fit that conclusion. And so, again, you know, you can't just look at three pictures and determine something like that.
Well, you'd be amazed at how many people have called into my programs and said, well, you know, I've looked at those websites and I don't see any records there. And then I point out to them that what they are doing is looking at what has been put on the internet to confuse them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after I've told them that I've talked to several of the eyewitnesses, their attitude changes. But, you know, the difficulty is, unless you really want to take the time to do the research,
mm-hmm.
why people will be just totally misled, and that's what it's all about. It's known as planned confusion.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, this Operation Cable Splice has been very effective, very effective.
And, of course, we know, for instance, my good friend Pat Matriciana, those of you may not know Pat, but Pat was the man who put out the video, the Clinton Chronicles, which I think was responsible for the actually the defeat of the Democrat majority in Congress, taking over the Republican sweep of the House of Representatives in 1994. And so what did they do to get back at Pat? Well, they planted people in his operation. One of his best friends was a FBI informant. one of the men who worked in his office, who you know as well as I do, Karen Lee. I don't know whether you were born, Pat, but I did. But he was so trusting. And then, of course, a sheriff who was down in Mena, Arkansas, giving him information on the story of the two boys who died on the railway track. He didn't know he was an FBI informant. They had totally surrounded him with FBI informants.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we're told, oh, the FBI can't investigate any. They couldn't investigate the terrorists. After all, they have to have committed a crime. No, the FBI is used to do whatever they want to. They just don't want you to know. They create agent provocateurs. In fact, they had one fellow that infiltrated the terrorist movement in New York back in 1992, and he was encouraging the terrorists to blow up the World Trade Center and blow up the Brooklyn Bridge, and he was doing everything he could to incite them to violence. I don't think he had to work very hard.
Well, yes, and, you know, I mentioned this too, Dr. Stan, in my letter. I had firsthand knowledge, the magazine that I used to work for, it now has changed hands, so I don't want to, people think, you know, new owners own the magazine now.
No, we won't mention the name, but
right, but I'm saying, just so people would know if they make a connection, the same owners are not there, it is under new ownership. But at the time that I worked at this magazine, a false story was put out, a disinformation piece. And when I tried to blow the lid on that story, two men that worked at the magazine at the time went after me and tried to destroy my credibility, and I was later able to prove. I had the court documents and everything that while they were working for the magazine, one was an FBI informant and another one was an informant for the IRS. So, you know, this happens all the time, more than people realize. And I always tell people, you know, just always listen with one ear open. Do your own research. You know, don't believe everything that you hear. Because we really are living in a day of deception.
Yeah, well, of course, Randy Weaver found that out. The man he'd known for 3 or 4 years, he thought was his good friend.
That's right.
Didn't know he was a BATF informant who'd been sent there to get him to cut off a shotgun so that they could entrap him, so they could get him to spy on the Aryan Nations movement up in the Idaho area.
Mm-hmm.
John DeLorean, who put out the DeLorean cars over in Ireland, they planted a man who became his best friend to entrap him in the supposed drug deal. And, of course, that's why they indicted DeLorean. Of course, the whole thing was a makeup. He thought he was going to be getting some money that he could borrow. He went to a hotel to meet these people. They opened the suitcase. He thought he was going to have money that he needed. And the reason he needed money was because the FBI had gone to everybody he was trying to borrow money from and told them, of course, I do not lend money to DeLorean because he's under FBI investigation and going to go to jail. So here's a guy who's making excellent cars over in Ireland. Of course, they're cars that don't wear out because they're stainless steel. And they didn't want a car that wouldn't wear out. And also, of course, there were other political reasons. They wanted to get DeLorean. So they contrived a case. Did you ever wonder how DeLorean got off if they had him dead to rights with a drug deal? Because the drug deal had been made up by the FBI to entrap him so they could send him to prison for a crime he hadn't committed. And then, ladies and gentlemen, as horrible as this may seem, this goes on in America today. And yet, but they're doing this as well to discredit the Patriot movement. And yes, I've had at least on two occasions people try to infiltrate our little organization here, mm-hmm. and they were both intelligent plants. So we have to be very careful who we have helping us here. We have a very limited staff because you never know. And what a terrible thing it is to live in this situation. People don't understand that behind what's going on today are dark, sinister spiritual forces that energize this because there is an ultimate goal and objective, a new world order and a new world religion. And, of course, we are preparing the world for the rule of the Antichrist. And when you understand that, so many of these things begin to make sense. And, of course, the tragedy of what happened on September 11th. Now we're, of course, seeing all sorts of new laws being enacted. We are, of course, moving rapidly towards the world government. They're using the tragedy of to get through the fast-track legislation to unite the Western Hemisphere in, first of all, to one trading bloc and then one economic bloc. and then one government so that we can be merged in with the other two major blocks throughout the world. It's all part of long-range planning, and the fact that the average person doesn't recognize this fact simply reflects the degree of control that today exists over what the American people think. Well, we're going to have to take a three-minute break. When we get back, we'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. If you're out there in the listening audience listening to us and you're hearing things, you say, these things couldn't be true, I refuse to believe it. And if you do, why, just continue listening. When I first got started at this, I couldn't believe most of these things either. And so much disinformation out there, but we try to be as honest as we can and to get reliable guests onto our program like Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter who will tell you what she has really found by careful analysis of what's going on today. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, it's as easy as calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Mary will tell you the suggested donation to join the Radio Liberty family, or subscribe to our newsletter, or donate, or whatever you can do, but we'll appreciate your help. Because we have an outreach. We have 5 hours a day. We just picked up an opportunity to be on a station in Atlanta. Somebody's paying so that we can be on a very large station there every Saturday, maybe just for half an hour, but at least we'll have a voice there. And little bit by little, we pick up more of a voice across America. Certainly our outlet of the American Christian Network up there in the Great Northwest allows us to reach people with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And every one of you who hears our programs can reach other people who can reach other people who can reach other people. And so we hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family or subscribe to our newsletter or certainly at least tell other people about our radio programs or tell them about our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and they can pull down our archive programs. This program will be archived there for 60 days. And of course, there will be our newsletters are up there, and many of the other things we've written. We should have that FBI pamphlet, the one that tells how you can find and identify a terrorist. Why, he's somebody that he's doomsday. Now, doomsday to the FBI was, do you believe that the Lord is coming again? Because that's what an FBI agent called me and asked me. Do you really believe that these are the end times? Well, as a Christian, I could not lie. I do believe that the Lord is coming again. But then they believe that since the beginning of time, except, since shortly after the Lord was here. But I believe these really are those times, and I believe we're seeing the advent of the situation that will usher in the rule of the Antichrist. But, of course, the FBI thinks that they can tell who a terrorist is by people who believe that, or they even talk about the Constitution. And you don't believe this. We've actually checked this out with some of the police officers whose names are on that, and you can call them yourself to find out if this was really put out by the FBI, and that you can tell a terrorist because he talks about the Constitution and about our freedom. Well, we hope that many of you will go to our website, pull down our information, and then, of course, help us to get the truth out across America, because freedom is lost when good people do nothing and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under siege today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now I want Karen Lee to tell you how you can get hold of her newsletter. She's not going to be able to tell you the price, but she can tell you how to get hold of it, and it's an excellent newsletter. I look forward to it every time it comes out. And I know Karen Lee, I've known her for many, many years, and you can depend upon the things that she writes. Karen Lee, how can people get hold of you?
Well, they can call our office at 562-493-8957. That's 562-493-8957, yeah. And it does come out... I do 6 paper issues, and then what I call, those are full investigations, and then 6 investigative updates. And if people are interested, we can backdate to September. We've been doing that because I have written so much about 9/11, and people seem to want all that information.
All right, that's 562-493-8957. And we've got Richard calling in from Washington. And again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Richard, have a question or comment?
A comment.
Go ahead.
About this word, disinformation game, I have a problem with the word game because it's indefinite. To me, life is a consequential time sequence.
All right.
And at one time, I was, in 1994, I was placed involuntarily in a psychiatric ward. And when I was, the detention paper said that I had reported and that I had played mind games with doctors who were communist and Nazi. And I had reported that I had been under doctors from the Soviet Union and from Nazi Germany. And but it was not a game.
All right.
It was a consequential time sequence.
All right. Well, we will try not to use that term again. And thank you so very much for calling, Richard. And I hope you're feeling a lot better now. Okay, fine. Well, that was Richard calling from Washington. And they do certainly use these techniques to confuse people. And there's so much planned confusion out there today. As we argue the wrong issue and spend all of our time arguing it without actually ever getting to the what the major issue is.
Well, I think he's referring to the title that I used on this story. And I called it the disinformation game. And I did that for a purpose. People might think of a game as fun. I think a game is a set of strategies. And if you think about it, when you're playing a game, you have to use a set of strategies to win. And so with that in mind, that is why I used the game word in my title.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, the lead article in the latest Time magazine just happens to be discussing this French book that's just come out. It's on the bestseller list over in France. And, of course, it suggests that there was no plane that crashed into the Pentagon. The book will be coming out here in the United States, the American translation, later this month. And, of course, the Time magazine reporters do a great job of ridiculing the idea and, of course, basically saying it fits into the X-File concept. So now anybody, of course, who's a champion of this, and good people have actually been swept along with this idea, and certainly there's been active disinformation in this country, and some of the people pushing this I have known for many, many years, and I've always felt that they were on the other side and that they were there for this sort of a specific purpose, to add to the confusion. So you have to learn, and you do after a period of time, who you can trust and who you can't trust.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, when I wrote the story, I said I predicted that this was put out to discredit anybody who questioned the events of 9/11, and I said the major media will get a hold of this, and there will be a story, because they'll say, you know, these conspiracy nuts or so forth. Well, it has been picked up, not only the story about the French website, but even on CNN, they were talking about the conspiracy nuts on the Internet now who believe this. And unfortunately, I have seen this story go back and forth like a ping pong ball, because since this French book came out, all these so-called patriots that believe that a plane didn't crash into the Pentagon, they have glommed onto this book and said, CCC. Then the government comes out and denies it and said, you know, this is not credible. Of course, the plane crashed into the Pentagon. And then the patriots have said, well, see, now the government is, you know, trying to deny it. And they think just because the government is denying it, that we must be opposed to anything that the government does, and they're trying to cover up everything all the time. Well, I'm not trying to say that there were not some questionable details in this Pentagon crash. But, you know, everything that happens, we can't constantly say, you know, look for rat holes or look for something. I mean, I'm sure there are many obscure details about this that we could raise questions, but you cannot, in the most important testimony, the most important piece of evidence in this story, are the eyewitnesses.
Well, you know, that's really so interesting, because with the TWA explosion that occurred, about 5 years ago, I mean, there were over 250 eyewitnesses who saw the missiles go up and hit the plane. And yet, the government saw fit to ignore every one of those 250 eyewitnesses. And at the hearings, they had a government official tell what the eyewitnesses said that they saw and why they were wrong, but they refused to bring in one of the 250 eyewitnesses. And they have convinced an awful lot of people in America that this was an explosion in the central fuel tank. We're going to be doing an interview very soon with a woman who's written a book called Into the Buzzsaw, and she worked for, I think, CBS. I'm not sure who she worked for, but she was told to get the true story of this. She worked for, she was an establishment reporter. And, of course, when she found, of course, that this whole thing was a cover-up, and she brought up the story and wrote the story and was going to produce the story, why, suddenly she found that she had been put into the buzzsaw. And they destroyed her, totally destroyed her. She became unemployable.
Yeah.
And, of course, she was just trying to bring out the facts. She couldn't believe that this could happen in America to an honest reporter trying to bring out the truth.
Well, you know, another thing I want to bring people's attention to, not only this French website, but there's been other websites that have, you know, shown these photographs from the French website or the Department of Defense, and they constantly focus on the photographs, and they ask questions about the photographs. I have not seen one website, one internet website, that is proposing this no plane theory that even mentions the eyewitnesses.
And I think that really is the thing that convinced me more than anything, that and the fact that I have seen those talking dogs. And but I don't believe in talking dogs, even though I saw them. We've got Mike calling from Washington. Hi, Mike. How are you doing? Mike, are you there?
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, I've been on jury duty, and I went in Monday morning. My group number got called in, and we went in and got into a discussion with this one gal, and she wouldn't stand up when the judge came into the courtroom when we were all gathered together, and she said it was because the flag that was in that courtroom had gold fringes around it, and she said that made it a foreign flag.
It makes it a flag of admiralty law.
Admiralty
law, not foreign flag.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's a sort of a stupid thing, but she's right that this is an admiralty flag, and, of course, this suggests that the law is not constitutional, but admiralty law. And then under the admiralty, remember, if you were at sea, they have a whole different set of laws. The captain or the admiral, goes back to the British ships, he is the law unto himself. He doesn't have to abide by the English Constitution or the American Constitution. He is the law. And under admiralty law in this country, the judge is supreme, not the Constitution. Whereas, of course, we are subject to the Constitution, and he's subject to the Constitution. But we've got some people within the legal system who want to make the laws themselves. They want to determine what's right and wrong. And we've got real problems. I would not have, I probably would have gotten up there, but I certainly would have, if I was asked if I wanted to be on the jury, I would have told them that I believe the jury has the right to interpret the law, not be required to do what the judge says, because that's the tradition of American jurisprudence.
And Mike, what you're referring to, there are a group of people involved in the Patriot community. What is called the common law movement. And they talk a lot about admiralty law. They go back to the origination of common law. They study this. Many of these people refuse to have
driver's license,
license plates on their cars, social security and so forth,
okay.
saying that we are in parcel registered with the Department of Commerce. I mean, not that that is not so. I guess my point is, at this point in time, this country is so far gone. I'm not concerned about whether I have a driver's license or have to put a license plate on my car. Our constitutional freedoms have been eroded so far and so wide that I think rather than focusing on these individual issues, we need to be doing major things, you know, like trying to take down the Federal Reserve or, you know, something like that.
I almost feel like at times that if I use currency anymore, I feel like I might be self-incriminating myself without even realizing it.
Oh, they want you to use that credit card so they can keep track of everything. And believe me, every purchase you make is recorded in the computer. Just like every telephone call you make is recorded, and they can be called up years from now. Why did you call that person that day? Anyway, thanks. Anything else you wanted to say, Mike?
No, that was just about it, and I'm glad you answered that because it had been kind of bugging me for the last couple of days.
All right, okay. Well, you just keep listening. We'll get around to all of these things sooner or later. God bless you. Thanks so much.
And God bless you, too.
Bye-bye. And our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, you know, Karen Lee, I get these people, used to get them on my program all the time, and they'd give the long dissertation on the common law and why they're right. And I always say to them, well, actually, you know, going back to the original concepts of our country, you're absolutely right. You know, and when we have a dictatorship, you're going to be the best informed person in the concentration camp. But I would far rather spend my time and my effort trying to educate people about what's going on and the spiritual nature of the battle rather than spend all my time studying law that really doesn't apply now, because we have courts that don't believe in the Constitution, and we need to take America back and restore the constitutional freedoms that once made America the envy of the world. Well, we've got Ron calling in from, once again, the great state of Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Dan?
Yes.
I just wanted to add something about this controversy about whether a plane flew into the Pentagon.
Right.
I was in the Marine Corps Reserve. I was a helicopter pilot. And we were on a two-week operation down in Southern California when a couple of F-4s touched wings, and both of them ended up crashing. One of them pancaked in, and the other one went just straight in like an arrow right into the earth. Well, the one that pancaked in, you could tell it was an airplane. It was all burned up. Well, all the crewmen ejected safely. So there were no injuries, in fact, much less no casualties. Everybody got out safely, but the aircraft were total. One of them, I say, pancaked in. You could tell it was an aircraft, but the other one went straight in, and all that was left were just little chunks of aluminum.
And I know my son was on the Carl Vinson, the aircraft carrier, for many years. You know, it's as a technician working on the flight deck, and his remark was, you know, when one of these planes hits, it just disintegrates. You know, but if it's going 400 or 500 miles an hour, forget it. And that plane was coming in at a pretty rapid speed.
Oh yeah, there'd be nothing left,
sure.
Hardly anything left that was even be the least bit distinguishable as an aircraft.
And again, it's a concrete building.
What about the motors? What would happen to the motors, Ron? Would they be pretty well destroyed?
They might stay together, but how could you tell? There was all that big fireball and
sure.
all that debris.
Right. Obviously, somebody knows exactly what happened, and somebody is feeding the fires of disinformation and intentionally trying to confuse us. And as we spend all our time arguing about this, well, it's sort of like the sleight of hand expert. You know, he gets you looking at one hand while he's picking your pocket with the other one.
Well, you have to realize that there are some people who are deceitful. And you just have to ignore them.
Okay, well, that's, of course, what we try to do is get people thinking. Do you think we're succeeding up there at all?
I'm hardly the typical
I'm sure
citizen.
I'm sure you are. Well, I hope that we've got a good listening audience. This is a great network up there in the Northwest.
Tom Reed's a great guy, too, by the way.
Oh, he sure is. And we're hoping to actually visit with him this this coming Sunday. So he's just passing through where we live. Anyway, these are exciting times, and I'm glad you're up there listening. And I think it's so important that we try to challenge people and make them understand that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king.
Yes, sir.
Anything else you want to say?
No, sir. Keep up the good work, sir.
We will. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
God bless.
Okay, and you too. Bye-bye. Okay, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter, and her telephone number is 562-493-8957. That's 562-493-8957. And, of course, I think that you can depend upon the material that Karen Lee puts out. You know, it's right, it's straightforward, and I think that she's a very astute observer of what indeed is going on. Well, are there any other issues, anything else we want to talk about here, or should we go to something else?
Well, maybe we've got a little bit of time. I wanted to focus a little bit on the investigative update that I did for May. I don't know if you received that over the Internet or not.
No, I haven't, so why don't you tell me, but I'll still read it when it comes.
Okay. I did a focus piece this month on, you know, the overall picture of what's happening on the, what I call the top of the elite. And I've sort of done an analysis, and it's interesting that since I wrote this story, this big push now is coming down on George Bush about foreknowledge. Because I have been analyzing, doing a lot of research, a lot of reading, and I've come to the conclusion after a whole lot of dissecting that, you know, we have the power elite, these people that are out to bring in a new world order, but I believe that there are two main factions up at the top. We know that these groups are always warring with each other all the time. But I mean, for lack of a better name, I've named them like Faction A and Faction B. It appears through a lot of analysis and reading that Faction A would now, I'm talking about today, I'm not going back 50 years or 100 years or anything, but to today, we have Faction A, which seems to consist of oil men, like the Bushes, Cheney with his Halliburton, Unocal, Rockefeller, the oil interests, Enron and so forth seem to be in this Faction A. Faction B seems to be more the professorial types, the Henry Kissingers. The difference between these two in today's world, it seems like Faction A would like to get their one world order through war, where Faction B would much rather operate through treaties.
But, of course, they both want a one world order, don't they?
Right. And they both want the one world order. However, they differ in their methodology and how they want that to come about. In analyzing all of this, if we look back to the election of 2000. That was not about voter ballots in Miami Beach. What that was a war between the two factions. And then we have to look at the information now that has been released in the press talking about the Carlyle Group, which hooks George Bush Sr. to that, all these different revelations, the oil in the Caspian Sea, the Enron scandal, I believe, and Global Crossing were done on purpose. I believe that Faction B is really trying to bring down the Bush presidency. And the way that media is controlled, you would not have these stories coming out unless they were authorized to do so.
What you're suggesting is we have a dialectic. We have two forces, a thesis and antithesis, working towards a new thesis.
Exactly. And this latest story about Bush having foreknowledge, I think that they would really like to heat it up because they really want Bush out of there. And so this is one faction releasing information in the press. And so there's this warring going on back and forth all the time.
Well, you know, if they wanted to suppress this information, they would have. You remember
when
Bill Clinton was being impeached, had been impeached by the House, and of course he was going to go to the Senate. And NBC had this juicy story. They had a great interview with Juanita Broderick, who claimed that Bill Clinton had raped her. And they sat on that story for weeks, knowing full well that it had all been verified from numerous sources, and they sat on that until the impeachment hearings were over, and then they brought it out so they would not hurt Bill Clinton. Now, so now we're seeing all these stories coming out about George Bush, so obviously somebody does want to create a problem here.
That's right.
If they want to keep information out of the media, they do. I mean, here in 1961 and 1962, the Chinese communists allowed 44 and a half million people to starve to death in China itself. Mao Zedong did that. It was well known in the West, totally suppressed in America. How could you possibly do that, suppress the planned starvation of 44 and a half million people during that period? And there are a number of books written about it, Great Hunger, The Hungry Ghosts. You can still get that from Amazon.com is where I got mine. But how would you keep that secret? Well, you control the media, that's what. And so why are they letting this story out now? That's, I think, a question you should ask, not whether it's true or not, but why are they letting it out?
Right. This is a factional war up on top. And as I say, Faction B really does not want George Bush in the White House. They want to take him down. And I've done quite an interesting piece on this. I've tied the economy to this. I believe that GE, one of the largest corporations in the country, is also going to come down because there's ties to George Bush in that regard.
GE?
Yes. I believe that we're going to see the failure of General Electric within this presidential term. There are many things going on behind the scenes.
Oh. Oh, well, I'm looking forward.
You'll have to check your email. Have Dave check it. It should be there, Dr. Stan.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, he's been so busy this last couple of nights doing other things for me. He'll get around to it, and I'm looking forward to reading it. Well, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, we just have to keep seeking the truth.
God bless you. Our guest has been Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. God bless you, Karen Lee.
Thank
we'll talk
you,
to you later.
Stan.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're going to have to bid adieu to our listeners up there in the great state of Washington and Oregon and western Idaho. And then, of course, we'll be doing a second hour here in the Monterey Bay area and for our Internet listeners. So we ask those of you who are in the great Northwest to pray for America,
to pray for
our leaders, and certainly we ask you to pray for our ministers because they need to be leading this great battle. And then we ask you to pray for revival because without revival, there's no hope for America. And lastly, please remember to keep Radio Liberty in your prayers, to pray for our provision and protection. And so until, well, I guess it'll be Monday now and we'll be back with you again. Dr. Stan, good night and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we're going to be having a fascinating program this next hour. We're going to be talking to Jeff Harshberger, who was into Satanism for a number of years, and he has an amazing story to tell, and we hope that you'll be staying on to listen to that. And, you know, of course, we can only reach a certain number of people. I mean, there just aren't enough days and hours in the day, even if we were to extend it to a 30-hour day, that I could reach enough people to have any sort of an impact out across America. But if you believe that there's a problem and you'll tell others about the problem, learn how to approach this intelligently. Don't grab people by the scruff of the neck and try to shake them. Learn how to ask questions and, of course, probing questions. Learn how to get people to understand that they have a stake in what happens and that, well, if they're Christians, it maybe if the Lord comes, he's going to come a long time after America falls. We'll be right back. well. This is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing it again, the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us on the line Jeff Harshberger and our Barger, and we're going to be talking about his experience coming out of Satanism. Jeff, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you, Dr. Steen?
I'm doing just fine. Now, you live over there in Florida, don't you?
I sure do.
Just sounds like you're just right next door. It's a miracle of electronics that we can bring you here to our, almost like you're in the studio. So why don't you tell our listeners who don't know you who you are, how you got involved in Satanism, and how it happened that you got out of Satanism.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for allowing me to be on your show. I got involved in Satanism actually through a strong interest in simple things of witchcraft and the occult and the paranormal as a child. I guess I came from kind of a dysfunctional family. That sounds so cliche at this point, but I came from a family that I didn't feel a whole lot of love and acceptance from, and from that scenario, I found myself looking for answers outside of the family unit. And as a child, I had some very strange occurrences, some very peculiar things happened to me. I was very aware of some things as a kid, darkness, the powers of darkness, if you will. For example, when I was a very young child, I would wake up in the middle of the night simply to get a drink of water or, you know, to go to the restroom, a simple child event, and I would feel, if you will, a presence, if you will, of darkness. I wasn't sure as a child what it was, but I just felt, or I was experiencing a very real presence of someone there when I would wake up to go to the restroom or to go get a drink of water. And for years, I found myself having this experience, you know, just knowing that there was someone else, if you will, that I was encountering. And from that, I began to have some very interesting experiences. I would see things before they would happen, and then they would happen as I saw them. Or there were times I would just know something, kind of a clairvoyance type situation would occur. For example, and I told you this before, Dr. Stan, that Christmas, there was one year Christmas, that there was a presence, a Christmas present under the tree with my name on it, and I just knew what was in the present. And I told my mom what was in this present. And what happened was I actually had a dream, and in this dream I could see right through the package, I could see right through the box, and I saw what was in there. It was a pair of pants and a shirt and a little black box up in the right-hand corner. And I told my mom that, and of course she thought I was opening the gifts and looking in before Christmas. And what happened was that I was beginning to develop some powers of telepathy and being able to see these things before they would actually happen, which just intrigued me to find out more and more of why I had this and how this was happening. And it just induced this real curiosity into the things of the occult. But at the same time, to be honest with you, I came from my parents' background, both sides, were very religious. And my mother's parents were actually Southern Baptist ministers, and my dad had a Pentecostal background, So I was always, at the same time, around religious Christian things. And I had a strong interest in the church as well. And I attended church growing up quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I accepted Jesus Christ at Vacation Bible School as my Lord and Savior when I was in third grade. And I wanted Christ very much, but I also had these experiences as I grew up. And I couldn't reconcile the two. I didn't understand, why I was having these experiences if I was a Christian, if you will. And I would attend church, but I wasn't really plugged into church. I wasn't really finding church to be the thing that I wanted. But every night before I went to bed, I would kneel before my bed right before I went to sleep, and I would say the Lord's Prayer, and I would pray to Jesus. But at the same time, I began to develop these abilities, and I just started to pull away more and more from the things of church and the thing of Christianity. I didn't understand the Bible. I wasn't discipled. I wasn't taught. I wasn't led into the things of God. And by the time I was in middle school, really, I had walked away completely from the things of God. I wasn't that interested in church. It, at that point, had absolutely no appeal to me. And I was very interested in parapsychology, the paranormal, telepathy. Uri Geller was very popular back then. He was a gentleman who used to bend spoons and kind of had the mind over matter type thing. There was some people that would go on television shows, The Amazing Kreskin, and he would just seemingly come off as having these abilities and these powers, you know, and I was trying to connect with those people on TV to get answers to my dilemma, to my situation on how I had these abilities and or powers, if you will. But I didn't have anyone really to talk to about it. And, I didn't talk to anybody about it. If I mentioned anything to my parents, they would think, I was crazy, or they would just simply dismiss it because they didn't know what to do with it. There was one situation or incident that I had that was very strong, and it convinced me that I had to pursue the abilities that I had as a child. One night, I was told that we were going to move. We were going to move from one house to another house, and the new house we were going to move in was in another town. And one night I went to sleep, and that night as I slept, I had an out-of-body experience where I literally traveled, and I can't explain that any further, but I literally traveled and went to the house that we were going to move to. And I went from room to room and went up the stairs and just visited the house. And then I came back to my body and went back into my body and slept. The following day, we went to the house, and my mom, she goes, "Well, welcome to your new home." And I opened up the door, and we opened up the door and walked in, and I had already been there. And it was this kind of experience, Dr. Stan, that just, I had no explanations for. I mean, I'm talking, I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, and I was alone with this. There was no pastor to talk to. My parents, I couldn't talk to them about this. I started playing with the Ouija board. Just messing with the things of the occult, just to find out what was going on.
Well, I think, there's nothing more intriguing than the idea that there is some hidden power out there, and see, maybe if we could tap into that, why our life would be better, or, we might be able to utilize that power to advance ourselves or make us more important, especially at that age, children want to be important. They want to have some significance. And, of course, the cult offers that. In some of our classes in America today, in the kindergarten, first grade, children are told to call on their helper. They have a helper there. Many people think that's a guardian angel. Well, there are guardian angels. I'm sure they're guardian angels. But there are also demonic spirits that are out there hunting and searching for the souls of children and adults. And you never want to call on that sort of a force unless you know exactly what you're calling on. And, of course, you were beginning to dabble. You were beginning to get into this supernatural. The Ouija board is such a convenient way of certainly accessing this dark and sinister spiritual force. Did the Ouija board work for you?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it scared me so bad because I asked the Ouija board some basic questions, some simple questions. Then I said, I asked the Ouija board, I said, who is talking to me? And what amazed me was it was moving by itself, and it spelled out the devil.
Right.
And when it said
that must have set you a little bit, didn't it? Set you a little bit back?
Well, you know what? It did, but it also...
It intrigued you.
Absolutely. It made me feel like, well... You know what? If the devil's trying this hard to communicate with me, I'm going to open up the door, because, you know, I had severed at that point pretty much my relationship with the church, and I really didn't call on the name of the Lord anymore at that point. I was more interested in, you know, these hidden powers, if you will, and I began to literally clamor after anything about the occult that I could find. Books. I went to the library, spent a lot of time at libraries, bookstores, anything I could find on the subject, anything that came on television, you know, that had people with, if you will, powers, I would make sure that I watched it. But, you know, a lot of it had to do with the fact that I didn't find significance within myself, in my family, and I didn't find significance you know, as a child of God, when I accepted Christ, and that led me into, you know, really being lied to and having the demonic, you know, interact with me. But I was intrigued, and I knew I was onto something very real from that simple board game experience. The Ouija board is much more than just a simple game by Milton Bradley.
Oh, of course, it really is. In fact, my wife tells me about one time she actually somebody brought one to the hospital where she worked, and she started to use it, and when that started moving, she realized she didn't want anything to do with it and would never touch it again. But she wasn't intrigued into getting into it any further, and you were. So then, of course, as your life advances, how is it that you made your first contact with a representative of a coven?
Well, I spent my middle school years, my high school years, falling away as far as I could from Christ. I started getting into the typical teenage scene, which is drinking and chasing girls, that type of thing, and delving and going after anything that I could find that was of the occult. But in my high school years, the latter part of my junior year, going into my senior year, there was a real identity crisis that all of my classmates, everyone in my hometown, you know, you're getting ready to graduate. You pretty much know what you're going to do, or you at least have plans of what you're going to do with your life. I had no clue. I was completely clueless. I took a job with a department store in my hometown, and there was a young man there that was the assistant manager of the store, who at that time I believed was much older than I found out that he was. He was only 18. I would have guessed in his early 30s, at least late 20s. He was much more mature than I was, much more responsible. He made a lot more money, I thought, than I did. He seemingly had his act together. And we struck up a relationship, friendship, you know, just through work and everything. But we began to, buddy up a little bit. And back in 1978, I'm dating myself here, in the Midwest, there was a tremendous snowstorm. And I couldn't get home from work one evening. And I was working with the assistant manager of my department store. And, I lived several miles from the store, and all the roads shut down, and there was no way of getting home. So the assistant manager asked me if I'd like to come over to his apartment you know, I was welcome to stay there for the evening because of the circumstances. And, you know, I took him up on his offer. And I walked over to his apartment, and on the way over to his apartment, we stopped off, got a little bit of beer, and, you know, he was only 18, but no one guessed he was 18, so he got, you know, as much beer and wine as he needed to. We picked up some beer and went over to his apartment, and when I opened up the door to his apartment, there was a very, very strange presence, but it was also a very familiar presence. It was the same presence that I experienced when I was a younger child, and I had experienced it recently. And I looked around his apartment, and I noticed that his apartment really didn't have your typical apartment accommodations. He had some very strange paraphernalia. He had, for example, a ceramic skull that had a candle, you know, in the middle of the skull. He had a stick that he used for his ceremonies. This guy was a Satanist. And as we began to talk and just casually drink, you know, a few beers, we sat around and chit-chatted, and, well, curiosity kills the cat. I just simply said, look, you know, what is all this stuff, you know? I've not been in this thick of a presence of the demonic before, and I was curious about that, but I also was very curious about why he had the things around his apartment that he had. And he simply told me straight out. He said, I'm a Satanist, and it excited me, to be honest with you. It excited me, it intrigued me, and as we talked about it, and we discussed what Satanism was, and what its philosophy is and what it could do for you, if you will. He asked me if I was interested in becoming a Satanist. And that evening, I became a Satanist. And he initiated me in a ceremony. And
what sort of a ceremony was it?
Well, it was basically, pretty much a dedication, you know, of completely opening yourself up to the demonic realm. And we also, he wanted to prove to me or show me some demonic power. And what he did was he cursed some people. He threw a curse on some people that were walking past his apartment. And as he cursed them, I stood there. You know, this was all new to me. I didn't know to believe it or not. But I found out the next day those same two people that were walking past the apartment had a bad accident in front of the department store that we were working at. He dedicated me. I dedicated myself to Satan that evening. And for the first time in my life, I felt, or I believed I experienced, just this complete infilling of the demonic realm. And I thought at that point that I had finally hit pay dirt, that this was what I'd been looking for all along, that Jesus Christ was just a joke and all that church stuff was now just it was history. And I began my journey in Satanism to be discipled one-on-one. And my plan was to be as powerful as I could, and to go and to destroy the Christians, because they were serving a dead God.
In other words, you felt that the God of the heaven was dead, and that the devil and his disciples were alive, and they had some significance. They could really accomplish things.
Well, I was actually taught that when Christ was crucified, that was Satan who killed him, and that Jesus wasn't the Son of God. He was just a lunatic, and Satan could kill and destroy anybody he chose to, and that he actually was and is God, you know, and that everything on the earth was mine. It was just mine, and I had to go and to take it, and that was my plan.
Well, so how would you go about taking it? How would you get this, and what, did you ever develop any true occult powers of your own?
Oh, absolutely. I started very, very small steps, you know. I began with the opportunity of going into crowds or going to like a restaurant or going to wherever people were congregating, if you will. Didn't hit churches right at first. And I would go in and basically I would just grab hold of their mind with my mind through telepathy, through mind thought, through releasing demons on them, really is what it was. And I would command and demand that the people in a crowd would stop what they're doing and turn around and look at me. And what amazed me was when they began to stop doing what they were doing, and when they turned around and they would look at me. Dr. Stan, they would look at me with the strangest look in their eyes. It was almost as if they were asking me, why am I doing this? And I loved it, because I knew at that point, though it seemingly is insignificant, I was learning how to control people.
All right. Well, of course, did you utilize these powers for other purposes?
Well, I began to, through ceremonies, and I started with the Satanic Bible and Anton Zandor LaVey, who started the Church of Satan in San Francisco in 66, pretty much became who I read his works and practiced. But as I did his ceremonies, as we did his ceremonies, you know, there were actual ceremonies, rituals, whatnot that LaVey had in his Bible, in his ritual books, that you would call forth demons and summons them to give you the powers of hell. And we did these and experienced, you know, the demonic. We experienced the actual the spirits, though we couldn't tangibly see them. We could honestly, and I can honestly sit here and tell you, I experienced their showing up and giving us what we were asking for.
And how would they give you what you were asking for?
Well, they would really, the trick of Satanism was to, as you gave yourself over to the devil, you would become more and more possessed. You were inviting these spirits to live inside of you, to be a habitation for these spirits. And as these spirits inhabited you, and they lived in you, if you will, you would experience their reality within you, which you perceive, you know, their character, their personality, and their level of abilities is your own. But basically, they're coming in you, and you end up being a carrier for them. And what you would do is you would release those demons on people to do what you want. And you would learn to control situations through releasing the demonic realm.
Well, now, of course, what happened? Did you actually begin attending meetings of the coven? How large was your coven?
Well, what I did was I went through a personal discipleship for 2 years, because I was it was one-on-one discipleship, and I came to a point in my discipleship after 2 years to where my teacher looked at me and said, you know, it's now time for us to start our coven, which, to be honest with you, I was a little apprehensive at first, because I knew I was ready for Satanism when he talked to me about it, but I wasn't too sure about this evangelizing, you know, going out and finding others. And he taught me how easy it was. We used to basically throw parties, and we'd supply all of the drugs, all of the marijuana, all the beer, and just have people over, and he would just go from person to person to person to person and talk to them and tell them about these things. And Dr. Stan, it was so easy. I mean, there were kids. I say kids. I mean, there were several years younger than us at this time. I was 20, you know. We had kids 16, 17 years old that were jumping at the chance to become a Satanist. And I'm not over-exaggerating. And it thrilled me that it was that easy. You know, the bait was good, and the fish jumped on it. And before you know it, we had a coven of 8 all-male coven. And we stopped at 8 because we wanted to get those people, those kids that came in, to a certain power level. Okay, we didn't want to, we didn't want a bunch of kids that we had to, you know, train up to be Satanists. We didn't want to overdo it, if you know what I'm saying. So we got about a half a dozen kids, and we started training them in Satanism, and we built a chamber, a room that was our ritual room. And we used to go in, we had the altar, and we had robes, the whole nine yards, and we used to summon forth demons. And we would, as I would stand there, and we were doing rituals, I was watching these kids, just demons coming inside of these kids, you know. And at first, to be quite honest with you, it was exciting, it was thrilling, because I thought it was a good thing, but then my heart, you know, started to affect me. When I say my heart, the human side of my heart. Now, as a Satanist, you're not supposed to feel love or concern, you know, for the human race. You know, I mean, you're not a person of love. You're not a person of feeling. And my heart started to go after or go out for these teenagers. And I started to see how the demons were, as they filled these kids, that these kids were dying. I mean, I can't explain it any other way. I just started to have compassion on these kids, and I started to spend time with these kids, and as they talked to me, I mean, it's funny, I started to become like the compassionate Satanist in this group, that these kids would come and tell me their problems. And so I kind of had an oxymoron, going on. I was a very human Satanist.
Well, now, did you do any sacrifices or any of the other things that Satanists do?
Well, with the kids, we had those guys, and I call them kids. They were 18, 19 years old. They weren't kids. What we did was we held off on blood sacrifice, human sacrifice, and we just started introducing them to the demonic realm and to the philosophy of Satanism. And what happened was, at the end of my tenure, actually, as a Satanist, we started to lean toward, you know, the timing of, now it's time to go one step further.
Well, now, of course, then, you weren't affiliated with any of the other, really, that sort of chain of satanic covens that really exists across America. You were sort of an independent satanic movement, based upon just reading and
right,
studying, rather than interlocking with some of the bloodline Satanists.
Well, we did affiliate with the Church of Satan, but what we found out was that the Church of Satan, we wanted to go a little bit further than what the Church of Satan was projecting. We went from the Levian concept of Satanism to more of a traditionalist concept of Satanism. So we went from philosophy, satanic imagery, representation, to, no, there's a real devil, there's real demons, and we're really going to go out and destroy Christians, and we're going to, you know, we're going to step into the human sacrifice, and, you know, even the vampiric perceptive, you know, drinking blood and that type of thing. So we changed in 4 years of being a Satanist. I went from really being a kind of a nice guy to really go, you know, into not being as bad as I could be.
Well, did you get at all into vampirism?
My teacher started to get into vampirism, but I didn't.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a break here. When we get back, we'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America or here in the Central Coast of California and you think that there's some problems out there, you think that there are spiritual forces that are probably unknown to most people, if you really think we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And that's as simple as simply picking up your telephone and calling Mary at 1-800-544-8927. She'll tell you the suggested donation for joining the Radio Liberty family or subscribing to our newsletter. And if you join the family, of course, you get our four best tapes of the month. You get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you're helping us to get the truth out across America. If, of course, you would like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, that would be the April newsletter, that goes into the funding, the creation of the Islamic terrorist movement. I mean, who funded the Islamic terrorist movement? Who trained the Al-Qaeda terrorists, fighters? Who was it who indoctrinated the youth in these ideas of radical Islam, of the idea that they should hate infidels and be willing to die for Allah? Why, if you want to know the background for that, give us a call and we'll be glad to send you a free copy of the newsletter, the number 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. And then, of course, your job, if you believe in what we're doing and believe there's a problem, is to tell other people about our radio programs, to tell them about our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And, of course, there you can pull down our newsletters and all sorts of archive programs. We're archiving actually for 60 days now. And we are very, very happy with our new server. And we're, of course, hopefully we're going to be able to serve you a great deal more. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and my guest this evening is Jeff Harshberger. And Jeff, would you like to get your telephone number and your website out there?
Website is www.refugeministries.cc, and I invite you to visit my website. And also, my email address is far468@netzero.net. I'll just leave those two points of contact at this point, and you're welcome to contact me. I'd love to talk to anyone about anything at this point.
RefugeMinistries.com, and again, your email?
far468@netzero.net, and that's RefugeMinistries.cc, not .com.
.cc, okay,
yes.
Fine. Okay, I never heard that before. Netzero.com, is it?
.net.
Netzero.net.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. So anyway, of course, you wound up in this. You're having a good time. It's sort of bothering you a little bit, though, that some of these young people are getting so enthusiastic about Satanism and accessing the power. But did you ever use this in any way other than little games? Did you ever actually benefit physically or, financially?
Oh, absolutely.
How did you benefit?
Absolutely. Dr. Stan, I in this coven, we had everyone kind of had their own role. Within the coven, we had, if you will, like the drone bee. We had the worker bees. We had one young man in the coven that went to work and gave us his paycheck, so we didn't have to work. I'll be honest with you. I manipulated the government. I was in school at this point. I was in college, and I manipulated the grants and just all of it to where I was making thousands of dollars off the government. I had a diamond ring on my finger. I was wearing designer clothes. I lacked for nothing. I mean, Satan he really did give me what he promised. If I bow down and worship him, he would give me the things of this world. I mean, I had in the world the very things that most people want.
All right, so then what happened?
Well, as I saw how this was affecting the kids, and you know, the more and more I interacted with the young guys in my coven, the more and more, I guess it just revived my heart, you know, the fleshly part of me, to care about the human race and about, you know, individual lives. And I was having, to be honest with you, I was kind of having a crisis, and I was really perplexed about why I had come to a point in my career, if you will, as a Satanist, and I was not experiencing the power level that I was used to. And I went to my teacher and I asked him, you know, what's my problem? I'm doing all the rituals. I'm doing everything I know to do. I've sold my soul, if you will, to the devil, and I'm paying him all my dues. You know, and what's my problem? And my teacher looked at me and said, yeah, you indeed do have a problem. And I said, yeah, I realize that. That's why I've come to you. And he said, well, you have a problem. You're angelically oppressed. And I had no idea what that meant. And he explained to me that I had an angel that was around me that was stopping the demonic activity in my life. Now, Dr. Stan, at this point, my mom had become a Christian, okay? And my teacher, the person who was discipling me, you know, previous 2 years one-on-one, and he was the priest of this coven, and he was training me to be a priest of my own coven, his parents were very strong Christians. And everywhere we went, we were coming in contact with Christians. And all of these people were praying for us. All of these people were doing spiritual warfare and taking on, you know, what we were about. And most of them knew what we were doing. They knew that we were Satanists. We would attend church. You know, I went to a church in the Midwest, a large four-square church, and that church knew that I was a Satanist. And we went in there and tried to cause ruckus. And we got the lights turned out one time. I mean, I didn't physically switch them off. We just caused a little bit of confusion, and the electricity went out. And we were in church, sitting in the dark. And there were some people in that church that knew that my teacher and myself, that we were Satanists. And all of these people were praying for us. And I was told I had an angel that was stopping, you know, the demonic around me. That made me much more angry and more dedicated in giving my life to the devil. And there was a newfound intensity that in rituals that I was looking to be infilled with new and more powerful demons to be able to release them, to break this angelic oppression. I totally went after destroying the things of God in my heart. I started to shut down caring about the younger kids in my coven. But to no avail. Absolutely nothing good came out of my intensity. I just found myself now with spirits, more spirits than before, that were inside of me that had no open door for their activity, and within me they turned against each other. And they started to literally put me through hell. It was awful. I mean, I was possessed, and I had spirits inside of me fighting each other and tormenting my soul. And I got to a place where literally all I wanted to do was die. It was torment. It was hell. And I attempted suicide twice unsuccessfully. I look back now and I laugh at it, but praise God. I mean, I went to a hotel with a bag of dope and a flask of whiskey and a shotgun, and I sat in this hotel room and I attempted to blow my head off. I looked into a barrel of a gun and I tried my best to pull the trigger, and I couldn't. And I went home the next day and threw a noose in my garage over the garage rafter, put the noose around my neck, kicked the chair out from under my feet, and I can't explain how, but I fell to the floor. The noose was very secure. I mean, I made sure it was secure. And I that night, I went to bed. I tried to party. I tried to drink beer. I tried to do everything that I was used to doing. The smell of beer turned my stomach. Couldn't even smoke a cigarette. It was awful. I mean, I was at the very rock bottom of existence.
Now, that's pretty bad for a Satanist when you can't do any of those bad things.
Well, when you, yeah, here I was a Satanist, and I couldn't die. I went to my teacher, and I said, look, you know, I'm willing to offer myself as a sacrifice. I mean, you guys are talking sacrifice. You know, here you go. You know, I'll offer myself as a sacrifice. And he refused for some reason, and I don't know why. I went to bed completely. I mean, you can imagine wanting to die so bad. You've attempted suicide twice, and I went to bed. I just went to bed and laid there. And as I laid there, I just broke, Dr. Stan. I just completely wept. I mean, like I've never wept before, and I haven't wept like that since. And I just laid there, totally drenched in my tears, and I heard a voice from the foot of my bed that said, in a very strong voice, in a command mode, get out. Well, I just completely stopped crying. And as I lay there, to be honest with you, I expected a demon to manifest, to show itself, because I was used to, you know, the demonic realm. And to hear a voice, you know, of course I would assume it was the demonic. And I just laid there waiting for the next thing, you know, which I expected the demon show up. And I heard the voice from next to my bed, almost the breath on my cheeks. It was that close. The voice said, get out. And when I heard it for the second time, I got up out of my bed, and I was living with my coven at this point. And rather than walking through the house and, you know, all of that, I just opened up my bedroom window. I was on the bottom floor, and I stepped out the window. And when I stepped out the window, I fell on my face on my gravel driveway in the presence of God, and I accepted Jesus Christ. I just realized that I stepped into the presence of God. I opened up my window, and when I opened up my window and stepped out, there was a new presence. There was a new reality for me. And I just got on my face. I knew who I was meeting. Up to this point, all this time, for 4 years, I was taught that Jesus Christ was dead and that I was serving the real God. I had sacrificed, I had done things that human beings shouldn't do, and I was promised the world, you know, and I was given some things of the world. I was given some riches, I was given some things, but I wasn't given the very thing that I needed. The very thing that I needed was love. And when I got on my face, I accepted Jesus Christ, and I knew it was Jesus. I knew it was Jesus. I just said, Lord, make my life okay. And it was within a couple of weeks that I was separated from the coven. And at the point of separation, I had a confrontation with the priest of the coven. He he looked at me and he asked me, what God did I serve? And I just looked at him and said, I don't serve the God you serve. And he hit me so hard, he just plowed into me with his fist. But I got up, he knocked me to the ground, and when I got up, I grabbed my jaw to see if it was broken, but I smiled, because you know what? I stood up for the thing that I believed in, because really up to that point, I'd always just let people have control of my life. And when I told him I didn't believe, I didn't follow the same God that he served, I stood up for the first time in my life for what I believed in. And I think at that point was when I really, really became a Christian.
All right, so then what happened? You just left the coven on its own, and did you join a church at that time, or what?
Well, it was very difficult because I was possessed. I was in trouble. I was in dire need of help. So I went looking for help. I went from church to church to church, looking for someone to help me. And Dr. Steen, I went to a good half dozen churches, and you know, I mean, I looked different than your average churchgoer. I wore sunglasses all the time because, you know, the eyes are really the windows of the soul. You could look into my eyes, and there was another presence. I was very light sensitive, so I went from church to church and met with various members and pastors of churches, but I wasn't getting any help. No one was really helping me. And I went to one small church up in the Midwest that, as a coven, we had attacked this church because we were told by the demonic forces that they had some power. And I went to that church, and I listened to the sermon, and I wasn't really impressed with this church, but there was a gentleman at that church that came up to me after the service and asked me my name and asked me if I'd like to come over for dinner. And I took him up on his invitation. A couple days later, I went over to their house, and after dinner, you know, we were sitting and we were doing a little bit more of getting to know each other type conversation. And I just said, you know, I need to tell you, I've been involved in Satanism. And when I said that, this couple, Harry and Joe Richardson, she just looked at me, Joe Richardson looked at me and said, well, you need prayer. And Dr. Stan, that was the first time someone said, let me pray for you. And she grabbed me by the hand, and she grabbed her husband by the hand, and she started praying. And when she prayed for me, this spirit came up and manifested itself in me and looked at her. And I felt like a snake. I just felt like a snake. And looked at her, and when I looked at her, this demon looked at her through me. There was a stronger power in her, and she rebuked that spirit, and it left me. When that spirit left me, I went to the bathroom to look in the mirror. And when I looked in the mirror for the first time in 4 years, I saw myself. Because 4 years previous, I had given myself over to demonic forces. And for 4 years, every time I looked in the mirror, I looked at those demonic forces. I looked at those demons that lived inside of me. And for the first time in 4 years, I looked at myself. And I saw me, and I smiled. I think I smiled for a month straight. It was just such a freedom, such a release, such a liberty, if you will.
Well, then you got to go out and get a job, though, don't you?
Yeah, now it's time for regular life.
Had you finished school yet, or?
I had quit school because of all of the things that were going on. It was just too much. It was just, you know. But yeah, I mean, at that point, I mean, I'm 21 years old. I was still living at the college that I had been attending. So yeah, I went out. I got a job, and you know, I was, by God's grace, He was giving me jobs that were relatively simple and easy. But I was messed up. I was really messed up. And this couple that did deliverance with me really became my parents, and they reparented me. And you know, she was very wise. They were very wise in Scripture, and led me through a lot of counsel and deliverance.
So you had to go through more in the way of deliverance after that?
Well, I would say, you know, I went through deliverance for several years, And then what I did after that was I got to a place where I was starting to feel pretty strong in my growth in the Lord, and I went to Bible college, and I went up to Bible college and you know, got my bachelor's degree at Bible college, and you know, I had to leave the nest, you know, and I quit school. I was in secular college, and I was going to be a child psychologist, and you know, I knew I wasn't going to be a child psychologist. And with my experience, I went off to Bible college. I just wanted to learn more about Christ. And, you know, I went and got my bachelor's degree, and I met my wife in Bible college. We've gotten married, and, gosh, that was 15 years ago. We've been married for 15 years now. And we've been in ministry now for 15 years straight, and we have started a ministry primarily helping individuals with, you know, deliverance, counsel, in any way, shape, or form, you know, in any way, shape, or form that we can help. We have started Refuge Ministries, and Refuge Ministries is based on Psalm 46, one that says that God is our strength, and He is our refuge. He is a very present help in time of need and in trouble. He will help us, and that's what we're about. We want to be used by God to help people, because if it weren't for that couple, Dr. Stan, that came up to me and took time, you know, I mean, really took time and asked me over to their house and then asked me if they could pray for me, I mean, I would still be in the shape that I was in.
Well, now, of course, you are then working with other people who have been involved with the occult and Satanism?
Oh, absolutely.
Have you ever encountered anybody who was a victim, say, of MKUltra, of some of the experiments the CIA had done, tapping into the dark side?
You know, that's interesting, because I got an email from someone that is right in your area that was asking me all about that. So there are a lot of people that are out there that are needing help, and you know what they're telling me is that a lot of people think they're crazy and they don't know who to go to. And that's the whole premise of this ministry, is to set up this ministry to be the place where those people, they can come to us and we can help them.
Well, the whole story is really so incredible that, you know, if we hadn't heard similar stories from many other points of view, you know, you'd say it couldn't be, but there
right.
really is another realm out there. There is an invisible war. There is an invisible world. There's an angelic world. There's a demonic world. And then there's the world that we live in. And, of course, people have to understand that everything really is spiritual. We only
right.
see part of what's really going on in the world. We don't see the demonic or the spiritual realm, but it's there. It's real.
Well, you know, even in the world that we live in, I mean, the demonic is so incredibly obvious. I mean, look at the whole entertainment business. I mean, television, you know, witchcraft is being presented as being, you know, the hip, cool, now thing you got to be involved in. You can go into any bookstore in America, and they will have books like crazy in the Christian section that's all mostly liberal, you know. But you go into the New Age, the occult area, you can pick up books on how to be a teenage witch, witchcraft, Wicca, all of the things that I mean, just take you. It's just bait to get you into the demonic realm.
What do you think about Harry Potter and the idea that it really is beneficial because it teaches children to read, and children get fascinated now because they can read?
Well, that's hogwash. You know, the whole concept of, you know, it's innocent and it's just getting kids to read. You know, it just, Harry Potter, I've got a Harry Potter book right here on my bookshelf, and it's a primer for witchcraft. Like back in the 80s, Dungeons and Dragons, you know, the whole controversy of, well, it's just a game. I don't understand the mindset of how people can, if you will, convince themselves when I think they already know. You know, we don't need to use witchcraft and you know, stuff like that of the demonic or the unholy. for, you know, the lie of, well, get the kids to read. You know, I mean, does it take witchcraft to encourage a child to read? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. And I think that it's we have introduced countless millions of American kids into the demonic and into, because of course, their witchcraft is different than Satanism.
Right.
Is different than Wicca, is different than the New Age, but they all tap in to the hidden knowledge, to the hidden power.
Absolutely.
And of course, it all has the same origin, but it comes from different points of view. We're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, if there's anyone out there that needs anything, any type of help, Refuge Ministries definitely is set up to be there in any way, shape, or form that we can for you. However, more important is that, as incredible as my story sounds, and as incredible, you know, and as easy as it is to say, well, that's, you know, that's just not my life, Jesus Christ is real. That's the really the whole reason why I share my testimony. Growing up, I didn't want to be a Christian. I didn't want to be a Satanist. I got myself involved in all of this stuff. When it boils down to it, Jesus Christ is real. Spend time in the Word. Believe it. Just literally believe it as it is written. Don't look for hidden meaning. Don't look for more than what's printed on the paper. And if there's anything that I can do for you, go to my website, contact me, email, contact this radio show, radio station. You know, get in touch with me. I'm here, but more importantly, Jesus Christ is real, and he's there to help you as well.
And, of course, that's refugeministries.com, and, of course,
.cc.
May pardon?
.cc.
.cc, I'm sorry. Refugeministries.cc, and FAR46 at netzero.net.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us, Jeff.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. God bless you, and we'll be talking to you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the program this evening. It's an amazing story I wanted to share with you. We've talked to Jeff before. He's got an amazing, amazing story. An introduction, well, of course, those of you who listen to our programs regularly know that this is not a unique story. There is another world. It's not a world that you want to tap into, but you need to know its presence, and you need to understand that this all works together. Because the objective of every communist, every socialist, every Satanist, every theosophist and Rosicrucian, and those in the inner circles of the various occult organizations, is a new world order and a new world religion. Time is drawing close. These are difficult times. Learn to turn to the Lord, depend on the Lord. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. And please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back with you on Monday. Until then, may the Lord be with you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.